You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of August 15th, 2018. And is this the technology that will fill that gaping hole in my heart?
Welcome back to the Experience Points podcast. I'm George Albor.
My name is Scott Truster.
We're the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a site dedicated to the serious but not humorless conversation about video games. And we game on pieces of technology.
Speak for yourself. I'm using an abacus and some paper. Well, that's, I guess that's true. Technically technology. Fuck, foisted it on my own petard.
I mean, you could do like an RPG, you know what I mean? That's some pretty old stuff. Especially yeah. if you don't even, you can make one up on the spot and just use like word of mouth. You know?
Oh, yes. The oral history of Dungeons & Dragons I've been working on.
There is technology-free gaming, but that's not what we're talking about today. We're talking about advances in technology. This largely comes from the recent, I guess, pseudo-release of the Magic Leap, which is an alternate reality headset that is currently retailing. To be fair, it's the dev model, right? So this is like the early model for people who really want to start working and building tools so that when it becomes reasonably priced for everyday laymen like Scott and I, we'll have something to use it with and potentially play on. Right yep. now, the dev price is what, $2,299?
Yeah, it's about $2,300 in easy payments of $19.99 a month. You too could own it.
Okay, real quick question. What would the Magic Leap have to do in order to justify you spending more than $2,000 on it right now? Like, what would you, what could I possibly tell you that would make you go on like Amazon or whatever the fuck and like, Magic Leap, I gotta buy that.
Let's see. What if you could see through walls?
That would be fucking dope. Yes. I don't, that would be very cool. Well, would that be legal though? I would hesitate on picking that up in that case.
Oh, that's a good point. And then they add your credit card number so they could track you when they bust their peeping Tom sting. Let's see. What if we're getting into Adam Sandler click like territory here, but bear with me. What if you could look at an object or a product and know when it would break or get lost?
That would be cool. That would be cool. Okay, another idea. And I think this one might work for you. You are the father of a small child. What if when you wear it, you could understand baby talk? Like, what if closed captioning appeared above Sam's head that's like, Scott, where's my fucking milk and stuff? Or like, oh, I'm going to poop.
Okay, that would be good because he's not verbal when it comes to pooping yet. You just have to kind of guess when it's going to happen.
Yeah.
And so if I could see like a countdown or like an internal monologue.
Hi, Magic Leap, I have a great idea. It's called the poop clock.
It's like, wait, hello? Hello?
Yeah, that would
sell. I mean, it would have to be pretty high up there, seeing as how... Wait, hold on. Side note. VR check-in. Do you own a VR headset yet?
Nope.
No, neither do I. Okay, so it'd have to be pretty cool, I think.
Yeah, it would have to be pretty cool, because VR right now is what... It's relatively affordable, right? An Oculus Rift is, what, $350?
Something like that, but then you have to pile on any controllers and probably a new video card and, you know, all the other stuff. So, but still, it's less than... It still is less than half the price of this thing.
Yes. My computer is VR ready. I'm not VR ready.
My life is not VR ready. I mean, I think people talk about this, you know, the application of it to video games, because it's just, to me, it's an obvious leap. You know, there's going to be
a magic
new technology
leap.
Has games. Yes. If just as if, you know, our first cell phones, we were playing Snake on them. Any sort of new technology has some sort of gaming related application.
Yes.
And since this is mentioned in the same breath as VR stuff, I think the comparison gets made very quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. And we talked extensively about this before we started recording, but I feel like I've grown into this person that is a little bit more, I don't want to use the word cynical, although I guess it probably fits, but I feel like the expectations around technology's ability to change up how we play has just been greatly diminished. And that maybe it's because I don't have VR, but it just feels like we have a lot of expectations when we see something like this, like, oh, hey, you know, we're that much closer to the holodeck, or, you know, we'll be able to play games in AR that seamlessly meld the real world with the digital world in a way that we've never experienced before. Like, finally, you can fucking have headcrabs invade your house and shoot them as though they were in your own living room and stuff. Like, it never feels as though the pieces of technology that transform how we play do so in a way that is so long lasting that I'm like, oh yeah, that was a foundational or transformational moment. I mean, outside, I think, of something like cell phones, where, you know, we have them in our pocket at all times, and it definitely changes how we play. It's not like it's become this thing where I look to technology as the next piece of innovation that's going to make my year of gaming, right? Like, I just don't associate technological advances anymore with new opportunities in games, because it doesn't feel like that's the limiting factor. I don't think that a lack of cool AR is what's holding us back or anything.
Do you remember an example of when, and even now with the benefit of hindsight, you can judge it on a broader time scale, but do you remember an example of something that did feel like, oh, this is highly technology driven, this changed the way that I think about or what I expect out of games, and not just because someone was clever and had a good, you know, mechanical idea, but there was some sort of technology that allowed you to, you know, to have that experience.
You know what piece of technology I really dug as a kid, actually? One year for Christmas, my older sister bought me a translucent Game Boy Advance. Where, like, you could see the insides. Like, that felt so radical. Like, oh, man, what? This is so cool. I could see the bones of my system. And there had been other Game Boys at that point, but I had never owned one. That was a game changer for me. I mean, that one felt like, you know, I could play in my bedroom at night and my parents wouldn't necessarily know that I'm spending my time playing video games. You know, or, like, I could go outside. I could bring it to a friend's house. Like, being able to transport that play experience... That has got to be one of the biggest, like, technological unlockings for me at a young age. And what's funny is that same advancement has been done over and over and over again, right? Like, when we started taking phone games more seriously, that was the big thing. Like, oh, phones unlock the ability to play anywhere, which we already had because I had a Game Boy Advance that, you know, that I could take on the go. And now, like, the Nintendo Switch, it's so fucking cool. I love being able to have it on the bus. I genuinely do. I really enjoy my Nintendo Switch. But having a screen on a gaming device that I could take on the go is not new, right? Like, that was a piece of technology that I had when I was a wee child.
So the leap, so to speak, that happened in the 1980s of true portability is just something that has been refined rather than something that has evolved or, you know, been built upon in a meaningful way.
Yes, I think that's a totally fair assessment.
Do you think the Magic Leap is actually an extension of that? Because the whole point of this thing is that it is more portable. You know, like, you're not as tethered to the computer. You're not as cut off from outside world.
Have you seen the pictures of what this thing looks like on your head? No one is fucking going outside with this thing.
I mean, it does kind of look like a William Gibson novel cover when
it looks real weird. Like, there's no way that you look cool with this headset on, right? I mean,
unless everyone's wearing one.
Well, I mean, think back to Snapchat, right? They had the Snapchat goggles that for a brief moment, everyone was like, whoa, new piece of technology. Like, finally, you can record absolutely every mundane bullshit that happens in your life, right? Like,
yeah.
And quickly, anyone wearing that has become, like, ostracized as people that, like, invade privacy, right? Like, I genuinely don't think that this is something that is going to improve gaming on the go. It still feels like a piece of technology you'd use in the home. The advancement in being able to carry the thing that is powering this experience on your body is that you're less likely to feel as though you're tethered to your PC.
Yeah. You don't think... I mean, fair. I think it would be a tall order to walk around with one of these things. But I think about people that travel a lot for work, or, you know, someone that gets, you know, the military use case, someone who's stationed at various places throughout the year or something. It would be cool to have something that is so portable that you could still, even if you're ashamed about wearing it in person,
as you should be,
you could go home and have a setup that you don't have to carry around, like a huge TV or like a you know, a whole bunch of other, like a console and controller and all that stuff.
Yeah. But you could also just bring a Switch.
That is true.
I mean, I the question, right, is what does this piece of technology unlock from a game's perspective that isn't available on another platform? And while I understand, like, technically speaking, there are games and experiences that you can have in VR and games and experiences that you can have in AR that are unlike things that are limited to a screen, right? But it, you know, you're trading like a sandwich for a bowl of soup, you know? This isn't like, you're not, this isn't like a gold dipped crazy thing, you know? Like the leap isn't as big as I think it is. It's more like a leap to the side, you know? It's not a leap forward.
I feel like that has been the unexpected outcome of something like VR, where it's just become another track of gaming in a similar way that it feels like phone gaming has become another track of gaming. Like, it's not all a shared it's not all a shared line anymore.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right.
I mean, I haven't played a VR game for super long. I mean, I can't remember the last time I interacted with one, but have you been following that stuff at all?
I mean, vaguely, I take a look at whatever sort of the new, like, VR thing that looks cool, right? Like, Moss looked really cool out of E3 this past year. That's a game that I'm sure I would definitely enjoy. Is that the thing that is like, oh man, I really need to have played Moss this year, otherwise I wouldn't have a good sense of the future of games? No way, right? I don't think that's the case.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably just a thing where it is... I mean, my understanding of it is it's an interesting perspective on a well-known genre or type of game versus this is a completely new... I don't know. I think about something like going back to when has technology itself changed the way you've thought about a game?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think there were a couple times in the jump to 3D that maybe changed my opinion on something.
Yeah.
Like maybe Quake or... even later in the game, like something like Shadow of the Colossus, where I was dumbfounded that a game could be that.
Yeah. But to me, it's the artistry on display there, right? Like, I don't think I played Shadow of the Colossus and I was like, oh my God, finally 3D, like, is unlocking everything. I mean, I guess, you know, the fidelity of the world, like, it felt really well crafted.
To me, it was the scale.
Yeah, which I guess that's true. I mean, when you're in it, when you're in that experience, do you think, or even afterwards, or even before, like, do you really think it's the singular moment in a technological timeline that is enabling this? Like, even if it is, technically speaking, right?
Mm-hmm.
That technology in the game space is somewhat equitably distributed. There are other people that were making games somewhat like that. It's just they're the ones that did it well.
I think about it in terms of movie special effects, because I actually think it's quite, it's quite similar, where there's a lot of kind of around the periphery and in, you know, spurts, there's a lot of, you know, that's a cool effect or that's interesting. And then there's something that pulls it all together where you have this Jurassic Park moment where it's, I never thought that they could do this.
Yeah.
And then you're seeing it, and it's like, man, they did it. Like, this is going to be...
It feels so real. Be
different from here on out. And
but then they're not different from here on out. Like, we still have movies with shitty CG.
But, I mean, I feel like the bar, like, even something on television looks better now than it would have in a pre-kind of an ILM world.
Yeah.
You know, there are some things that just kind of raise the bar for everyone, and even if it doesn't look as good, it's like, oh well, it clearly benefited from the lessons learned on these bigger things, in the same way that when I was playing Shadow of the Colossus, it's like, what the hell? Like, they did it. I never thought a game could have this huge of an environment and, you know, have a massive scale like this. And then a bunch of games tried to do the same thing, and some of them, some it worked well, some it didn't. But, like, there was something about that game that felt like, we are now setting the bar here.
Yeah.
And you can try to reach it. You know, maybe some games won't measure up, or some games, you know, I don't think you have a game like, you ultimately don't have where God of War went without Shadow of the Colossus.
Sure, yeah. I guess to some extent the new becomes the norm so fast.
Yeah.
That it becomes like less impactful each time someone uses it in a successful way.
Mm.
I mean, in regards to like film graphics, right? There was a brief moment when 3D was heralded as the piece of technology that would save cinema, right? Like people would finally go to the movies again and see movies in 3D. And this is a fucking game changer, right? In Avatar, James Cameron's Avatar.
Hmm.
Turns out the movie's not good. And
don't worry, there's going to be four more. You just wait, though.
You know, like I've seen a lot of movies in 3D. And when I think back, like the best uses of 3D are still so few and far between that it's clearly not the thing that's going to save cinema anymore, you know? Mm-hmm. Like 3D isn't it. And it's there. I mean, if you're really into it, you can watch it. But I almost never opt for 3D anymore because it's not something that I think is going to like push the boundaries or be, you know, justify in any way the inconvenience of having to wear those like shitty glasses and darkening my viewing experience. You know?
Are they still doing 3D for every, you know, big release that's coming
out? Oh, yeah. I mean, all of the Marvel movies, Ant-Man, like, they will have 3D screens for sure. I mean, it's...
Are the movies shot in such a way that they're thinking about that, or are they just kind of doing it...
Very seldomly. Very, very rarely. Most of those films are updated after the fact into 3D. They're not shot in 3D.
Right.
Which is incredibly difficult, because you have to have, like, 3D cameras and stuff.
Well, and also, you're not... I would imagine that whoever's directing that movie is not thinking about it in terms of 3D, so they're not thinking about the perspective and the you know how layered a scene is,
yeah,
and
where
so
like,
on and so forth.
Where like someone's holding a pool needle like horizontally and they just turn and it comes right at you.
Whoa.
Yeah, that doesn't really happen as much as you would think.
I mean, Avatar was shot like that. I mean,
Avatar was,
whether you like it or not, like he clearly had it in his head that this was going to be a 3D movie, whereas I guess whatever Age of Ultron or whatever could be 3D, but probably they weren't thinking about that during the filming of it.
I mean, the James Cameron Avatar thing is interesting, right? Because we know that James Cameron is theoretically working on like what, three more movies in the Avatar universe?
Plus a theme park too.
Yeah. And a theme park. God, how weird is that, by the way?
Very strange.
And there's no doubt in my mind that whatever technology James Cameron is working on to make the next Avatar will make it a spectacle worthy of seeing on the big screen in 3D, right? Mm. But that piece of technology itself, while enabling the creation of something that is like new and unique, is not the thing that is going to be ushering in with any sort of consistency the games that, or rather the experiences that will touch you in the way that you are pursuing when you're looking for like good cinema, you know? Mm. And I think that same thing applies to technology and games.
Yeah.
We have VR, and there are some VR experiences that are really great and you can only have in VR to really understand like what makes that piece of technology exciting. But it's not as though we all still believe that VR is the future of games, or that the window of opportunity is so big that if you don't have this, you're going to be missing out. Like you might miss out on one or two experiences, but I just don't think, it's even personally, I think culturally, I think we've come to expect less out of technological advancements in a way. Like it feels as though, you know, while there's a lot of people excited about the Magic Leap, there is a lot of sentiment that, you know, we are moving towards that future of the holodeck with these starts and stops and baby steps. And not everything that will come out of these are going to be necessarily good. In fact, a lot of them are going to be bad. And by the time a technology is at a place where it's really something that we integrate into part of our lives, it'll be so normal that it won't have that same allure or charm or sense of like infinite possibilities that it maybe did when we were so optimistic about it.
Is it just a price thing? Like, what if this was
$20?
Yeah, $20. And I mean, would it spark something? Like, is there a gating factor? I'm thinking about this, and then I'm thinking about the launch of the Nintendo Wii that we talked about a lot last week, because we were talking about all
Nintendo numbers.
Yeah, the ungodly amounts of Wiis that they sold.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think about how I'm trying to put myself back in time.
Motion control is the future of gaming. 2007.
And wondering if it is just a democratization thing.
I mean, $2,300 is not that is not an affordable piece of hardware. Well, you know, I think that it goes back to the conversation we had a couple weeks ago about automation and the Roombas and the Amazon Echo, right?
The old Roombas and Echoes,
right? Like, the Amazon Echo can do a bunch of shit, but all I use it for is a clock and a weather device, you know? Like, so I think even if this were $20, great, I'll have that first moment, I'll bring over some friends. We'll do AR and we'll talk about how weird it is to hold a baby elephant in your hand, right? But 2 weeks from then, a month from then, am I still going to be integrating it into my life? You know, like the things that make pieces of technology fundamental to your lived experience are far more mundane, I think, than the possibilities that are open when you first announce something crazy like AR or VR, and certainly they're not in the marketing per se, right? Like, what would make me excited about AR is like having a calendar feature on my walls, you know, or like being able to, I don't know, like talk to someone visually while walking around my house and like doing chores or something, right? Like, it's a lot of this mundane stuff. It's not the thing that's going to like build a ton of excitement. So even if the price were low, you know, I don't think it would suddenly spark my interest and make me think that this piece of technology is fundamental to gaming now, you know?
That's a good point around how it's hard to... The most exciting stuff many times, like... Well, I mean, that's why the Game Boy and the Switch and all of that stuff is effective, because it's mundane to say, oh, well, you can just take this gaming place, this gaming console, any place you want. You know, you can take it on the bus, the plane, whatever. But that itself is actually very easy to market, because you just have a bunch of very attractive looking people having a very cool rooftop looking party and like having fun. And it's like, oh, cool, that looks fun, I want to do that.
Yeah.
Whereas, like you said, it's hard to get excited about that. Have you seen the commercial for the Apple HomePod or whatever they call it?
No, I don't think so.
So this is Apple's version of the Echo or the Google Home device. And the commercial that they released...
Oh, this is the one that looks like a witch's cauldron.
Yes. Yeah, it's like the gray weird thing that they made. They got a real famous director to direct this one of their ads. It was something like... I forget who it was. It was someone crazy. It was like Baz Luhrmann or something like that. I don't know who it was.
Oh, but anyway. This is the dancing one. Michelle Gondry.
Yes. That's who it was. Yeah. So the way that they shot the commercial was there was like a big chunk of the commercial up front, you know, a good 20 seconds or so of this woman having just basically a shitty day.
Yeah.
Where, you know, and her work was bad. Yeah. Her subway ride was shitty.
Like, and you're all like, man, stuff. I know the feels.
Yeah.
me IRL.
Me IRL. To me for IRL. But, and then when she comes in, she just asks, I think she just asks Siri. It's like, oh, Siri, play me some dope music tunes I like or something like that.
Yeah.
And then they, through the magic of film and editing, they transform her entire apartment into this crazy psychedelic dance studio. And there's like a hunky guy at some point or something. Maybe I'm just making that part up. But anyway,
I do remember watching this now.
There's a crazy, like, psychedelic whatever. And it's like, to fully market a device that makes your mundane tasks better and or easier and or pleasant, you have to go so far beyond and make that stuff look so exciting that it borders into the absurd or maybe crosses it.
And what's like hilarious about that as well is that entire video was largely done with no visual effects. Like, that was a crazy physically constructed landscape where like FKA Twigs is like dancing around with like a version of herself, you know, like it's an awesome video, but like it doesn't actually reflect the way that we use that technology, you know. And yeah, that's fine. Like,
well, it reflects one use case. The one use case is play me a song, and yeah, then you have to have 2 more minutes of the commercial trying to get you so excited about this thing that you're that you'll like buy into the fact that she played a song.
Yeah, exactly.
Easily.
Which all devices that this is competing with can also do. I mean, yeah. And that's okay, you know. Like, I don't want to come off as like, I'm just cynical and mean, and everything is boring, and we should just fucking play our board games, you know, like. I don't want to be like Mr. Old Scrooge here. I think there are very exciting things about these pieces of technology, but I think it's okay to come to this point. And I think partially we're coming to this point because we've been burned by both past pieces of technology in gaming, motion controls, the Kinect. Like, those are big pieces of technology that were heavily marketed. Or even last week, we're talking about the Nintendo like health tracker thing, right? Like, there's these pieces of technology that we hype as these things that open up the windows of possibility in gaming. And I think that it's okay to recognize that they don't really do that. A few people will make really great experiences using whatever tools that they have. And that is the story of games, and it will always be the story of games, right? Like, a few people taking whatever tools that they have on hand and making something awesome. And that tool could be some tiny little pixelated indie game, right? Something like Minute, right? That uses really simple tools to make something really compelling. Or it could be something that is using VR or AR to also be really compelling, right? But it's not, we are no longer heralding technological advancements as these great sources of like rapid, exciting change in that space, and we shouldn't. The other thing too is, I wonder how much my feeling, or maybe the feeling generally, is because of the way that the companies that have made these pieces of technology have been in our headlines as sort of, you know, potentially malicious or like invading our privacy, right? Like, you and I both talked on the podcast ages ago about how Facebook's purchase of Oculus was more exciting in a non-gaming way because it allowed you, allow you to connect with friends and family in interesting ways in a VR setting. But in this day and age, when fewer and fewer people are using Facebook anyway, and there's a lot of mistrust around Facebook, does that even itself seem like a possibility anymore? Like, do you feel like we are now been spurned by the very companies that aim to represent the future? And now we're like, man, you know what? Your future involves you fucking taking a boat to space and leaving all us poor people here on Earth. Why should I buy your fucking piece of technology?
Because it'll make your charred wasteland so much more pleasant to look at after we beam in more,
to, like,
you know.
Zoom forward towards Ready Player One. Like, that is not exciting.
Yeah, that's an unforeseen. Actually, maybe it is foreseen, the rise of the megacorp or whatever. I mean, there is something, even though Magic Leap is not associated with, you know, Facebook or whatever, it has taken a lot of investment from Google and Alibaba and I think one of the big telecoms, I forget which one. So there is like, okay, well, is this just going to be used for ads like everything else is? Which is, it's hard because that's now always in the back of your mind.
And on the front of my screen.
And on the front, and on your retinas.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of another thing that changed the way, or things that like maybe, I mean, the huge, like the scale stuff, the 3D stuff made a big difference to me, you know, whether it was like Quake or Mario 64 or even Shadow of the Colossus. The Game Boy thing is a great call. I mean, just it's so banal, but so important.
You know, the other thing I do remember being really excited about was the Wii U's second tablet, the second screen experience. Mm-hmm. And that's because I come from a background where I really enjoy board games. And secret information is like a fundamental part of a lot of board games that rank amongst my top favorite board games of all time. That never really came to fruition on the Wii U. Like, there was no game that really, I think, used that second screen in a way that made me, or rather made other developers pop up and go, oh, this is great, we need to use this, you know, with few exceptions. But there was a moment of genuine excitement for that tool. It just was never really used very well. Well, I think maybe the one exception being Super Mario Maker, you know, which I think is a really cool use of the technology and being able to build the track on the device with the stylus and then porting it into your system. But, you know, again, it didn't herald a new age.
I think some of the stuff is it hides in plain sight, where if you look at like
just the Babadook.
It's just like something like having your games connected to a persistent internet connection, where yes. Something like Journey, we always reference Journeys, but it's because it does it in such a clever way. And even other games did that, you know, Burnout Paradise or Dark Souls or anything. I think that quietly has become just this major shift in how we think about what games could provide us. And it is an inherently technological shift. Like, if you don't have the internet and if you don't have a console that has the hardware and the software to run it, like, it's just, there's just way for that to happen. Like, you can't design that without technology.
Or, but, like, auto cloud saves.
Yeah, it's so, they're so there's such a layer, you know, there's such a base layer of the experience that they're hard to even see, but they become so important when you even think about untangling them.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's what would sell me on VR or AR, right? It's like someone providing me some mundane, just efficient thing that I could use on my day-to-day life, you know?
But it becomes, but the key is, it would have to be a fundamental shift, where I do feel like games like Journey did cement this fundamental shift in what we expect from multiplayer, where it's no longer good enough that we have to just explicitly opt into multiplayer. Like, it's fine. I mean,
finding a lobby.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, sure, you can do it if you want, but I think the expectation now is that people will be clever, or at least try to give you some sort of integrated experience in a way that just didn't happen before that big persistent online shift happened.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good one.
But that requires, again, I think it comes back to just it's something that seems very simple rather than something that is like this huge splash, like a piece of hardware coming out. And, you know, it's not crazy. Like, you couldn't make, it's kind of like the Apple commercial. Like, you couldn't make a crazy commercial about it without going full psychedelic.
You know? You're always on the internet.
Yeah, it's like,
Or even coming off and sounding like it's a terrifying experience.
Right.
Like, oh, I don't want to always be on the internet.
I would still like to try one of those things.
That's true. Well, before we go, like, what's your sort of crazy out of the box? Like, if they were to announce a franchise you love, or like a new game specifically for AR, what would get you hyped?
Imagine Pikmin 4 AR.
Oh, fuck, that's really good, Scott.
You would just find, look, picking stuff around in your house. You'd have to like open up a cupboard and there'd be Pikmin in there.
Dude, that's a fucking great idea. You could make little obstacle courses for your Pikmin using like teacups and shit.
I mean, that's something that Miyamoto would get high and design in a weekend. It would be great.
Yeah, that's really good. You know what I would actually be into is like a tabletop simulator, like just genuine board games. Like, don't have to buy a game, sit down at my table, there's fucking Star Wars space chess.
I was just going to say, it's the realization of fucking playing chess with Chewbacca.
I mean, that would make me jazzed. $2,300 jazzed? Not so much.
I was got to do a lot of Kessel runs to
afford
this thing.
Sell a whole lot of Wampa for that.
All right, everyone. ExperiencePoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And ExperiencePoints.net is our holodeck. Come down, experience the nets.
Yeah, we won't look at your history, your browsing, your holo history. It's fine. We'll clear your cache every time.
The big question is, how do you do porn on it, you know?
That's true. It's somewhere in a lab. They're working on it right now.
Yeah, somewhere in a lab. A filthy, filthy lab.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.